Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Shaw Park, home of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes 2012 Open House. Well underway here. Batting practice still going on. Kids everywhere, families everywhere. Just a great atmosphere here at Shaw Park. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the very best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
Phoenix and Nashville.
Phoenix and Nashville. Before we went to break, Paul Edmonds posed the question, has Mike Smith played himself into a goaltending position on the 2014 Team Canada in Sochi, Russia?
He's played himself into the conversation. The thing about goaltending is it's so unpredictable that I think that's the hardest position to project for 2014. If you had to ask me who the top three goalies were for Canada, they'd be Price, would be my starter right now. Price, Fleury, and Cam Ward. Maybe even Cam Ward would be my starter.
Yep.
Fleury obviously had that little bit of that breakdown this year. But the thing is this, guys. In 2 years, I mean, Mike Smith's in the conversation, but in 2 years, what if Price is struggling at that time in that season? Or Fleury is gone. It's so hard. You know, it's not as easy to project as Giroux will be there and Stamkos will be there.
Right.
So right now, Smith is certainly in the conversation, but also let's consider the fact that that Ilya Bryzgalov looked great in Phoenix.
What you're saying is the way the system Phoenix plays makes it easy for a goaltender to look good.
Look at Brian Elliott. Okay, Brian Elliott's not a great goaltender. He posted an amazing season. I wasn't sold on him. I'm not sold on him. Halak is better. But if you watched that game 2 nights ago, the goals he let in weren't hard stops.
They were not tremendous shots.
If you can make those stops, you look great. You put another shutout.
I agree with what you're saying. A system like the Phoenix Coyotes, or back in the day with the New Jersey Devils, a system like that does improve your numbers and make you look better. Mm-hmm. But going into this season, and I was one of those analysts who think they know something but they don't know anything, and thought that the Phoenix Coyotes, Richie obviously does know something. He's not the guy in that situation.
Well, yeah, I got it wrong too.
But I didn't think Mike Smith coming off of his
year. I picked Phoenix to win Chicago. I picked him to lose.
No. But I'm talking about before the season even started. Oh. I didn't think the Phoenix Coyotes was going to be a playoff team. And Mike Smith has far surpassed my expectations. To get back to Paul's son's question about is Mike Smith a candidate for Team Canada, the Sochi Olympics?
Certainly a candidate.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the way he has played, people were actually angry that Mike Smith wasn't named as a Vezina candidate. And there was three good goalies that were named as Vezina candidates, and Rene Lundqvist and Quick all deserve their nominations. But absolutely, he is a candidate. He has emerged, and he has played unbelievably. He's the best goalie in the playoffs right now.
It's a lot easier to be a goaltender in this.
There's so many Vezina candidates because
it's a lot easier to be a goaltender in this day and age
absolutely.
Than it was 10 years
so
ago.
So you can talk about the system and all that, but Mike Smith's numbers don't lie, and he's been unbelievable.
Going back,
and he definitely deserves consideration.
Going
at the very least.
20 years ago, if your goals against average was 3 and your save percentage was .890, you were a Vezina candidate. It's a completely different game.
Drew,
my
argument was always, and you could always counter this argument with the original, argument, but you still have to get it done. And Mike Smith is intimidating the Nashville Predators right now, and you can't argue about that.
Let's talk about that series real quickly.
Sean Burke has done an unbelievable job in Phoenix with Mike Smith.
Good point,
if you look at Mike Smith in Tampa Bay, and you got to remember, he came into the league as Marty Turco's backup in Dallas when Marty Turco started
Smith
to come out.
Smith was very well thought of, is he?
Exactly.
What happened was he was a big piece of the Brad Richards trade.
Yep.
I always liked Mike Smith. What happened to Mike Smith was Mike Smith always played the puck, as he still does.
Yep.
But he got a concussion.
That's right.
Yep.
And that changed what he was able to do.
It affected his confidence also severely.
Asking Rick talking about it. It affected his willingness to play the puck, which is a strength to his game. And it seemed to have affected him for probably at least 2 years. And he gets out of Tampa. He was awful last year, guys.
Yep.
He was dreadful. Gets out of Tampa, gets into a goalie-friendly system. He gets Sean Burke working with him, a bigger goalie as well, just as Smith is. And he gets his confidence back.
One of the things...
His physical skills were always there. It's such a mental game at the NHL level because everybody's physically talented.
One of the things that... that they've talked about a lot in Phoenix, and we're going to have Tyson Nash on in about 20 minutes, and we'll talk to him about Mike Smith. What Sean Burke has gotten Mike Smith to do, if you watch Mike Smith, he's further back in the net now. A guy like Tim Thomas likes to come out and challenge goalies. He's a smaller goalie.
Lundqvist Mike plays Smith, back in the net, too.
Exactly. Mike Smith is 6'4", and what Sean Burke has gotten him to do is play back further in the net. And if you watch him, he makes a conscious effort to do that. Mm-hmm. And he's played the puck less, and he's played healthy. And, you know, I got to give full credit to Don Maloney and Dave Tippett, who said at the beginning of the year, we're confident with Mike Smith. We think that he can be our goalie. He's number one. And they've given him the number one spot, and he's ran with it. Mike Smith was there the entire year, and he was fantastic, and he posted great numbers, got the Phoenix Coyotes, the division title, the first ever division title.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Nashville Predators are a better team, and they had more points, and that's just because of the way they do this, the seeding. But you can't take anything away from the guy.
Let me ask you.
It's really phenomenal, and good for him, because he's a guy that he's 30 years old, and this is his first year where he's been a number one goalie. And, you know, not unlike a Tim Thomas.
Well, he was number one in Tampa.
Yeah.
For a very short period of time.
Tampa wanted him. Dwayne Rolson was supposed to be his backup. It was Mike Smith's job.
He was the guy in the trade, in the Richards trade. Yeah. He was the
guy. Let's say start to finish, this is the first year.
No, of course, yeah.
Let me ask you guys this question. Is this series done?
Absolutely not. It's absolutely not.
It's a good question. Playoffs are so much about momentum.
Game 5 is Monday night. Phoenix has a chance to clinch it on home ice. Incidentally, today is the 3-year anniversary of the Phoenix Coyotes being placed into bankruptcy by Jerry Moyes.
Are they done?
Is this series done?
Well, I guess can or will are two different questions, right?
Can Nashville come
back? Sure, because Phoenix isn't the most dominating team ever. Will I don't think Nashville will come back from this. No.
What about Radulov and Kostitsyn? How do you think that was handled?
Again, you fly in Radulov from Russia.
Yeah.
You drop him into the locker room.
Yeah.
He takes away a job from a Tutu or a Halaschuk or somebody like that. He has character issues. He already bailed on you once with a contract. He's asked to provide offense. Then those character issues come to be. You knew they already existed, and then you're going to penalize him for it. And so I don't so much have the issue with penalizing him for it, because the team rules are the team rules. The problem is then you keep him out of game 4. And my question is, if you're keeping him out of game 4, then why did you bring him back at all? Because the discipline, maybe I can answer my own question. Coaches are reticent to change something when they win, because it's their butt. But if you change it when you lose, you always don't have any pressure. Coaches, one thing I always have an issue with is that they're hesitant to change when they win. Just because Radulov wasn't in the lineup does not mean you won. Doesn't even mean, it may have been a factor, may have not been a factor. It was a 2-0 game. Okay?
Yeah.
So it was defense. Radulov, and the fact that they couldn't score last night, Radulov and Kostitsyn, two of their most talented players. You brought both of them in knowing they have character issues. You knew they have character issues. You went into the playoffs knowing these guys were the guys you're going to rely on with character issues. Suddenly you're blaming them for the character issues? It's the same thing about last week with Chicago and Detroit. If you're not going to spend any money on goaltending, don't complain about goaltending. If you're going to get Radulov and Kostitsyn in with character issues, don't start, and you know that, you take them on knowing that, don't start blaming them for the character issues.
But as far as the decision goes, Drew,
do you think they're going to, sorry, let me ask this, then I'll get back to you. Do you think they're back in the lineup for Game 5 in Phoenix?
How could they not put them in the lineup?
Both. You think both?
How could they not put them in the lineup?
And they produce well in the playoffs.
In the first round, they did.
I mean, I don't have the biggest issue with taking them out for Game... I don't know if I would have taken them out for Game 3, frankly. I don't have the biggest issue with that. Game 4 is the issue.
You don't have an issue? You wouldn't have taken them out of the lineup if you knew that the night before the game, they were out at a bar until 4 a.m.?
Lawrence Taylor was out on drug binges till 8 in the morning. They're not Lawrence Taylor. I grant you, they're not Lawrence Taylor.
But if they were Shea Weber or Ryan Suter, they're in the lineup. But they're Radulov and Kostitsyn, and they haven't been performing in the first two games.
But you're assuming that they weren't partying like that in the first round when they were performing well.
Well, that's what
you're
I was
right,
just going to say.
And we don't know.
The problem that the timing was terrible, okay? And the timing would have been terrible regardless of when it happened, in a sense, because those are two guys that you brought in late in the season, Kostitsyn at the trade deadline and Radulov towards the trade deadline, to give you a more offense. And that, let's be honest, Nashville is going for a push here. You know that Ryan Suter and Shea Weber might not be on the team 2 years from now.
Exactly, and you affect his brother.
Yep.
You affect the chemistry of the lines.
Yep.
You've thrown guys who can't score at all, like Halaschuk and Tutu, who haven't played in a while.
Richie, the timing was bad because it was before Game 3. If it was before Game 1 or after Game 7 and they went out and partied after they won, Game 5 after they beat the Red Wings in five games, that would have been different.
But yeah, exactly.
You're
exactly.
Coming off of two losses in Phoenix. You've struggled to score goals. And obviously, they made the foolish decision to go out in Phoenix and party. But the timing could not have been worse.
What?
Because you had to make that decision, set an example when you desperately needed the
Is it not the panic move? Is it not the panic move that Vancouver did with Schneider and Luongo? I mean, aren't good teams supposed to go through? I realize there's partying. I have a hard time believing that some other guys on this team haven't been partying past curfew all year and it was overlooked.
4 a.m. on the night of a playoff game, I think, is a different scenario.
David Poile and Barry Trotz, I'll make this point quickly, we're in between a rock and a hard place.
But they went to the leadership on the team, and they supposedly, we don't know there, but they went to Weber, and they went to Suter, and they went to Fisher, and they said, what should we do with these guys?
They said suspend them.
And that, to me, speaks more.
Well, then if that's
more,
the case, then I'm not sure why they brought him back in the first place.
Well, I mean, had they known this would have flared
up. Come on, Radulov bailed on the team. They welcomed him back with open arms.
How do you bring a guy like Radulov back next year after this?
Well, I think they're both in the KHL next year.
Yeah, it's very possible.
I can't see them being on the team next year.
But hear me out here, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you're bringing him back.
Quickly,
you already
right before
quit
break.
On the team. And then, so I was surprised they took him back in the first place. They take him back, and then he acts out again.
Well, in the first round, it looked like a genius move, or it looked like a good move in the first round. And then in the second round...
If you're taking him back, you're taking him back warts and all, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know what...
Kostitsyn had his issues in Montreal, too, again. You're getting these guys on the cheap, or you're getting them back for some kind of reason. Why? Radulov wanted to burn an entry-level contract here. That's what he wanted to do.
Of course, I'm aware of
that.
I understand his logic. He's a free agent after this season.
You stomach it, and you deal with it.
We'll see how Nashville responds.
Or you don't bring him in the first place.
We'll see how Nashville responds in Game 5 on Monday night. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Blues-Kings series. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. We're live from Shaw Park for the 2012 Gold Eyes Open House. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Coming up next segment, Tyson Nash is going to join us.
Washington just scored. Mike Green.
Just under, with 5 minutes and 48 seconds to go in Washington, Mike Green has just scored for the Capitals to take a 3-2 lead over the New York Rangers. We'll keep you up to date on how that game plays out. Earlier today, Canada lost to Team USA in Helsinki, Finland by a 5-4 score in overtime. We're here at Shaw Park, Gold Eyes Open House. It's a great day. Come down and join us here.
You know, on the
St. Louis and Los Angeles.
Ezzy, that's the second time you've done that.
Yeah, Ezzy, you're stepping all over, man.
I know Timmy's doing a great job back in the studio, but I'm not used to bumpers coming in, you know, from somewhere else. I'm used to the bumpers in the studio. I'm excited. I want to talk hockey here, but, you know, I was going to talk about Mike Green, but well, let's talk about the Blues and Kings.
St. Louis, L.A., Game 4 tomorrow night. L.A. with the commanding 3-0 lead on the Blues. I'm willing to bet that all of us around this table think that series is now pretty much a foregone conclusion.
We all picked L.A.
Picked L.A.
I picked L.A. as well.
I was kind of worried.
Are you surprised at how dominating L.A. has looked so far in this series?
Yeah, I am. The Los Angeles Kings are, you know, I picked them in the beginning of the season to be the Western Conference representative in the final. This is how I thought they were going to play at the beginning of the season. It's taken them forever to get there, but they're there, and they're there when it matters most. They have game breakers, Drew. And out of all the teams in the Western Conference, they have the only team that has game breakers as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You know, the Phoenix has really nice players. St. Louis has some nice pieces, a little better players. And Nashville has some, obviously, guys on defense. Weber and Suter, but on offense, I don't think any of those teams have game breakers except for LA, and that's Richards, and that's Carter, and that's Kopitar.
Yeah.
And they're rolling, and that doesn't even bring into, we're not even taking into account guys like Dustin Brown, Justin Williams, and then the Muckers, the Kings, and Nolte Richardson's, and all those guys. But everybody's going, and Daryl Sutter is doing a masterful job right now.
And speaking of guys getting going, what about Drew Doughty in Game 3?
Well, game breaker.
Getting
game breaker.
3 points. Yep. I mean, this Kings team had so many problems this year, and it took a while, even when Daryl Sutter came aboard, for them to switch their style around, and he has switched their style around. This is a much more focused team than it was under Terry Simpson. Well, much more focused.
Terry Simpson. The Jets.
Terry Murray. When we saw the Kings earlier this year, and we watched them, the word that came to mind was slow. Sort of big, lumbering, and slow.
Yep.
More or less the same team sit that away.
Are you talking about the Kings or just Dustin Penner?
Well, I mean, it was more or less the It was more or less the same team as it is now. Except their speed seems to be so much better. Is it simply a factor of the new system that's under Daryl Sutter that it seems to make them play so much faster?
Yeah, it's a good point, Drew, because they're more aggressive and they're skating more and they're not sitting back as much. So that's a factor. Obviously, Jeff Carter is a very good skater too, Drew, so that works in there as well. Voinov can really skate. Now, obviously, Jack Johnson is one of the best skaters in the league, so they lost a bit of speed there. But Carter added speed up front, and you mentioned it. What they've done is they've increased their game speed and their attacking ability, and the truth is, Drew, playing against a Vancouver team can skate, but the Vancouver team can skate, and St. Louis can skate, but they've matched them, and their size and their physical ability is also, and their physicality has taken a toll on those teams, and they're big, and so because of their lack of speed, their stick length and their size, and if they're moving all the time and they're playing as a unit, but more importantly, attacking, then their size and their length becomes a huge factor because you get in far. Jeff Carter, big guy, long stick, can move.
Right.
And the guys who aren't that big are aggressive and engaging, and everything's working for them. And they look right now like the best team in the National Hockey League, as far as I'm concerned.
I would agree with that statement.
And they've got swagger.
They got Quick. We haven't even talked about Quick.
Jonathan Quick is proving to be one of the best goalies right now. Yeah. It's not the best.
Yeah.
When they got Jeff Carter, they acquired obviously him for his goal scoring ability.
Sure.
But does it not seem like when they acquired Jeff Carter, they got the Mike Richards they traded for in the summer? It took mm-hmm. 6 months to finally get him, and it took him to get his brother back in Jeff Carter. But it seems like Mike Richards is now focused and back in the game and engaged.
You just nailed it right there, Drew. And I would say that they didn't get the Mike Richards that they expected. They got Mike Richards' old buddy, his best pal, and they got the guy that they needed. And as far as that goes, Mike Richards, got the Gordie Howe hat trick in Game 3. Mm-hmm. And I think that those two guys right there, Dustin Brown and Mike Richards. Obviously, we're talking about Jeff Carter. But when I look at Dustin Brown, I'm looking at the guy that I think right now is a serious Conn Smythe candidate.
I agree with that.
And when I looked at that round one series win over the Vancouver Canucks in Game 5, putting Henrik Sedin on his butt, he now has points on all four shorthanded goals. And when I'm looking at this series now so far, mm-hmm. the goal that I can't get over is the shorthanded goal that Andrei Kopitar scored that was just absolutely beautiful, going from his backhand to his forehand and assisted by Dustin Brown. But the way I look at those guys, they're stepping up their games in the key situations, and Mike Richards is basically all over the ice, and he's causing trouble all over the ice. He's willing to fight. He's willing to chip in. He's willing to sacrifice his body. He gets it done on the power play. He gets it done on the penalty kill. And right now, it seems like every single guy has that defined role, and that's a thing that Daryl Sutter does. When you look at coaches, Richie, you're always looking at what's a guy, what kind of system does he like to play? Okay, but he also can get guys to play their
that's
role.
Right,
a guy like Dwight King, he comes out of nowhere, and now he's on the top line of the LA Kings, getting goals, getting key goals. And, you mentioned the Jeff Carter trade. They got rid of Jack Johnson, and I mentioned this too, and they knew what they had in Slava Voyanov.
Well, that trade
really
better
good.
Work out in the long term, in the short term, because the long term is going to be where it
well,
costs
sure, and 13 years down the road when it's still paying.
My Mike Richards game, I've always liked it. We said it, though. During the season, he was ineffective.
Yeah.
He didn't seem engaged. He seemed frustrated.
Because it wasn't the playoffs. Would love it if the playoffs were
season.
There
seemed to be an issue in the locker room. They put Dustin Brown on the market, so there's some fortuitous action that happens there.
The best trades are the ones you don't make.
Yep. And so a bunch of that broke, and then they didn't deal him. But there was problems in the locker room. They fired a coach. He wasn't performing. He wasn't scoring. But as we called it then, as we said what was happening then, that's all those things were happening. We're more than happy to give the guy due credit for terrific performance and great leadership throughout.
Right.
And another thing that one of the main reasons why I picked LA to make it to the final this year, and don't get me wrong.
Well, which you picked them back in September,
right.
That's
exactly. Don't get me not right before the playoffs.
Right, exactly.
This is the issue. Mike Richards' ability to win faceoffs, kill penalties, play against other teams' best players, do all those things. The biggest factor and the reason that I thought that it would allow them to take the next step is that it would take pressure off Anze Kopitar.
Yep.
And that has proven to be true in the playoffs, more so even than the regular season, because what's happening is they're both producing,
Absolutely.
But Kopitar gets open more now because other teams want to match up against Richards a bit, or Richards is playing tougher matchups, and he's taking tougher faceoffs, and he's doing a bunch of things. Andre Kopitar is a little more free now to do what he does best, and that's produce offense, and he's big, and he's long, and he's tough to move off the puck, so they can beat you below the hash marks. They're willing to hit you in the neutral zone. They can move the puck out of their own zone with guys like Voinov and Doughty. And you know what? Guys like Matt Green, Alec Martinez, and the stay-at-home guys like Scuderi and Mitchell.
Yeah.
And they haven't got injuries either, guys.
Well, certainly helps me. And that's, I mean, just part. That's part and parcel with the action. You can never predict that. But, you know, a guy like Dustin Penner, who, I mean, did anybody see this renaissance of Dustin Penner coming from anywhere?
Yeah, I saw it by the...
By the pancake bar?
No, I saw it by the three letters at the end of... his contract status.
Well, UFA.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the Winnipeg Jets will take a run at him because the way.
So are you saying that after after this season, and he gets another contract, which he's now going to get, and he's going to get, do you see him reverting back to lazy old Dustin Penner again?
Yeah.
Really? So you're not buying into it.
Hey, but you know what though? Dustin Penner deserves credit because he was terrible this year, and now playing with Mike Richards and Jeff Carter. He looks great, and he's a little slow, as a skater, but he uses his body terrifically. Great, great around the net. This guy's won a Stanley Cup. He's been there, he's 6 points in 8 games. It's pretty good for him.
He's not a bad player at all. I mean, he's very talented offensively. He's lazy and he does all those things. I wouldn't give him big money, but he's worth considering for a free agent, down the line here in the summer if it comes at the right price.
Well, it'll be an interesting thing to say. Right now, the Los Angeles Kings, are they your Western Conference representative in the Stanley Cup Finals?
Right now, yeah, for sure.
Are they your cup winner right now?
It'd be interesting to see. That really depends, Drew, on which of those Eastern Conference teams comes out because they're all so different. I mean, you play Philly, you play the Rangers, it's a completely different series. So I can't say that as of yet.
I hate when people, because I mean, I tweeted this 2 nights ago. The LA Kings bandwagon is full already. Everyone's jumping on the LA Kings bandwagon, and they should be. Right now, they look like the best team in the West, hands down. As far as being the cup favorite, I mean, it depends on matchups. Because the New Jersey Devils, in my opinion, look pretty good. And, the Philadelphia Flyers aren't out of this series by any means. That series is far from over. So as far as I'm concerned, the Devils and Flyers on the East side, and the Rangers, too. The Caps are playing the Rangers really tight
right now.
So, I mean, let's just leave it at the LA Kings look very good right now.
Let's leave it there. And I'll tell you who's the most happy about the LA Kings looking so good. The NHL for their TV ratings will be through the roof. It never hurts to have the second biggest market in the U.S. in your Stanley Cup Finals. Let's go to break. When we come back, Tyson Nash is going to join us. We're live at Shaw Park for the 2012 Winnipeg Gold Eyes Open House. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Shaw Park, home of your Winnipeg Gold Eyes. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program from Fox Sports Arizona. He's the color analyst for the Phoenix Coyotes, Tyson Nash. Tyson, welcome to the program. How are you this afternoon?
I'm good. A little bit tired after that road trip, but feeling pretty good.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. You obviously made the you were in Nashville last night for Game 4 between the Coyotes and the Predators. You know, looking back at last night's game, to my eye, watching on television, it seemed like Nashville controlled the course of the play and the flow of the game for the most part. But they were trying to be a little bit too pretty in scoring the A goal and then the equalizing goal. Was that your perception as well?
Not really. I thought the Coyotes actually did a real nice job. I think both teams did a real nice job, playing to their identity. These teams really are mirror images of each other and how they like to defend and, how they pay attention to all the details of the game. And, last night was a perfect example of that. For a 1-0 hockey game, it was a pretty entertaining game. And as per usual, when a team's down, they start pressing, and Nashville was pressing. They had opportunities. You got to give them a lot of credit. They threw a lot of pucks at the net, and did a good job of getting to the net. But last night, the difference in that game was the captain Shane Doan and our goaltender Mike Smith, and that is the difference.
Smith's been the difference
all year, Tyson. But just quickly as an aside before we get into the Coyotes' defense and the goaltending and how great everything's been really so far, do you think there'll be any supplemental discipline for Rusty Kessel's hit on Matt Howlsechuk last night?
No, I don't think so. I think there's been definitely a lot worse hits out there. Rusty's not a dirty guy by any means. He's a very physical player. He finishes every check. He's definitely, again, he's not a dirty player. There was no intent on that play whatsoever. There's been very little talk of Rusty Kessel's hit. And, you know, you go back even to the Chicago series, you know, some of the hits that kind of fly under the radar, that Hayes hit on Roosevelt that basically knocked him unconscious. I don't even think the NHL looked at that hit from behind where he did receive a five-minute major for boarding. So I think Rusty's in the clear.
In terms of Kessel, you know, that was one of the more underrated acquisitions by Don Maloney last season. It seems like, at least to my eye, you know, he came up, Harold is more of maybe an offensive player. He seems to have finally really found his niche as a solid defensive defenseman. He can move the puck, and he plays more, maybe a more physical game than people think. How do you think his game has matured over the years?
Well, I don't think anyone's ever, you know, made the mistake of thinking that he's an offensive defenseman by any means. I think he's always been kind of a stay-at-home, steady, really reliable, you know, defender, and that's what he brings here. That's what Dave Tippett, you know, he gets the most out of everyone because he gives everyone a responsibility and a job to do. And Rusty's job is not to get points. It's to defend first and foremost, make sure he blocks a ton of shots, make sure, he's real hard to play against. He plays often against the other team's top lines. And right now in the playoffs, I mean, it has been an absolute bonus for him to get the points that he's gotten. I believe he's got two goals and he's got, you know, 6 points. So he's been real effective. He's got an offensive upside, real good instincts when it comes to jumping into holes and picking his spots. And hopefully that continues.
Tyson, we've been talking about Oliver Ekman-Larsson basically all season on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He was a high draft pick, and on many nights he leads the Coyotes on defense. Do you think there's really a better young combo in the defense combo, that is, in the NHL right now than Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Keith Yandle?
Yeah, you know what? It's I'm glad you guys are talking about him because he has flown under the radar for a long time. You know, basically, you know, all year there hasn't been a lot of attention on Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and the kid's 20 years old, and you know, we see him game in and game out, and he's just been unbelievable. He's one of the great stories in the National Hockey League. He was in the American League last year. He was a healthy scratch in and out of the lineup, and now with the last 25 games of the regular season and into playoffs, he's been probably our most consistent and most offensive defenseman, and that's saying a lot when, you know, you got guys like Kessel and Keith Yandle, as you mentioned. So Keith Yandle is another great defenseman. He stepped up his game in the playoffs, and that's what you need. You need guys to step up. The regular season is one thing, but you sure find out a lot about players and your team when it comes to playoff time.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Tyson Nash. He's the Coyotes color analyst on Fox Sports Arizona, pardon me. Tyson, Michael Bodker, you know, has been a real key to the Coyotes' success this playoff series, up and down from San Antonio back to Phoenix. You know, why do you think it's finally clicked for him that's made him so successful this playoff run?
Well, I think just that. It's finally clicked. He's finally figuring it out that, you know, he can use his skill and his speed, which is his best asset by far. And I think he was intimidated for the longest time. He's a big guy. He's not tall, but he is so thick. And he's probably got the biggest legs that I've ever seen. So he's real tough to move off the puck, and he's now using those strengths to his advantage. You look at the two game-winning goals that he had against the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, that was just him using his offensive instincts and using his speed. Oftentimes you'll see guys that are so fast, and they don't use that to their advantage. They're just there's a little bit of hesitation, and that was the case with Mikhail Bodker. Now he's just going. He's relying on his instincts and his ability, and that's how he gets the loose pucks, and he takes advantages of his assets.
Tyson, Mike Smith's been absolutely incredible, really, all season. There's no question about that. In the playoffs, he's just been even better, if that's possible. There's many reasons why he has come to this point, but how important has Sean Burke been to his development? I mean, you look at the similarities, it's actually kind of scary. You know, Sean Burke was a 6'4 netminder. They're both the same weight. They're both from Ontario. Has Sean Burke's coaching, and not only that, maybe his ability to relate to Mike Smith, been one of the keys for his success?
Yeah, we always kind of joke because, you know, Dave Tippett's the best coach in the National Hockey League, if you ask me, bar none. When you look at our roster and this ownership issue and what they've gone through, but you have to throw Sean Burke into that mix as well for what he's done, as you mentioned, for Mike Smith. I mean, this is another, probably one of the best stories in the National Hockey League. You know, this is another guy that was in the American Hockey League last year, put on waivers twice, and he was given an opportunity here, first and foremost, by the coach Dave Tippett. They have a history together in Dallas, so Tip's very familiar with what Mike Smith is all about, and he's raved, about him ever since they had to trade him away. With that goalie controversy that they had in Dallas with Marty Turco. So, but Sean Burke, has really, instilled a different mindset for Mike, who's a real aggressive type goalie. He's big, very athletic, probably the best athlete on the team. And Sean Burke has just changed his approach and his style, really, and now he's not going after pucks. He's being very patient. Which is sometimes hard to do when you're an aggressive, athletic goalie. You think you got to flop around and be more like Pecorine, but in fact, he's the opposite. He stays way back in his net. He lets pucks come to him, and then he just relies on his talent and his instincts and sucks up those rebounds. That's probably his biggest strength, besides his ability to play the puck, is just his rebound control, if there is any.
Tyson, you obviously played for the St. Louis Blues and the Phoenix Coyotes, and you saw some of the effects that concussions had on your teammates, and obviously we've seen what's happened to guys like Sidney Crosby and Chris Pronger this year. Having said that, do you think the NHL handled the Rafi Torres suspension appropriately?
Well, I think it was a little bit excessive. If you want to know the truth, 25 games, and I get it. I mean, it's more about Rafi Torres than it's about the hit itself. Because if I go out there or you go out there and make that same hit tonight, you're not going to get 25 games for it. I can tell you that. It's all about Rafi Torres and his past history. But 25 games I thought was pretty excessive. But the NHL is about sending a powerful message, and I think the players heard it.
Tyson, last question. We'll leave you on this. We appreciate your time, of course, this afternoon. You mentioned Dave Tippett. You said he's the best coach in the NHL, in your opinion. Is he as even-keeled behind the scenes as he appears to be in front of the cameras?
Yeah, this guy is, I've seen a lot of coaches in my day, and I write this roster down every night and what he has to work with. And this guy, I mean, there's some good players, don't get me wrong, but when you break down the roster, you look at this team, and it's a bunch of misfits. Castaways from other teams, that he is squeezing every ounce of talent and skill out of this lineup. He gives these guys a job to do, something to take responsibility in, and everybody feels involved. And hockey is such a team game. You can have superstars, but if you don't buy into the team concept, it's just not going to work for you. And that's what the Coyotes are all about. They are a good team that won the division that haven't got near enough respect around this league. And, finally people are finally taking notice of what this team has accomplished, really, not only this year, but the last 3 years. And it's all because of Dave Tippett. Like you mentioned, real calm, cool. He's got the respect of his players. He's a reward type of coach where if you're going to play well, whether you're Paul Bissonnette or you're Shane Doan, he doesn't care. If you're playing well and getting the job done, then you're going to play. And, his motto is, I don't dictate ice time, the players do. And I think any player that hears that, that's music to their ears.
Tyson Nash, color analyst for the Phoenix Coyotes, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy Game 5 on Monday night.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Tyson.
Thanks a lot, Tyson.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Shaw Park for the 2012 Winnipeg Gold Eyes Open House. Batting practice taking place behind us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more after these commercial messages. Shortly past 2:15 in the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Tyson Nash
from the Phoenix Coyotes color analyst for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. We're live at Shaw Park, home of the Winnipeg Goldeyes, for the Goldeyes 2012 Open House. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Give David a car. Give David a call. I think I've done that before.
You have.
Yeah. Give David a call at 230-6129 for all of your real estate needs. Richard can attest to it.
I can.
He is Richard's real estate agent, the best in the business. That's David Carr at 230-6129.
Be well taken care of.
You will be very well taken care of. First caller through right now to 780-1290. First caller through to 780-1290 will win a complimentary consultation with David and a gift card from Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza.
Awesome.
First caller through at 780-1290.
Give David...
Edzie, put your phone down.
Give David...
You can't get the press.
Give David Carr a call or give David Carr a car.
There you go.
A close personal friend of ours. Either way.
You can give him your car.
Give him a call. We'll give you a car. We'll give you a call. We'll give you a house. We'll give you... What else can we give here? We're giving pizza. We're giving Carbone pizza away. There's nothing else we can give.
Give you a Remus. We're going to give you a Remus.
We'll give you... Oh, the sign is falling over here. It's getting a little bit windy.
It's like a domino over here.
I mean, it's still beautiful out, taking batting practice, but, you know, give David a call.
NHL News and Notes.
NHL News and Notes, a very busy week in the NHL. Let's start with a story that broke earlier this week, sort of Monday, Tuesday, if I recall correctly. There was a rumor published in the Edmonton Journal, in the Edmonton Journal's Cult of Hockey blog on their website, that a Akbars Kazan of the KHL had made contact with Alex Burmistrov's agent and had made him a contract offer. Denied immediately by the Jets, or no commented by the Jets, denied by Burmistrov's agent. Do you think there's any truth to that? Do you think that, is there any chance Alex Burmistrov will be playing in the KHL next season?
Is there a chance? Sure, there's a chance. I don't really know, you know, what the odds are of that chance, but I wouldn't discount it. Remember one thing here. Alex Burmistrov's agent, Mark Gandler, was quoted as saying in the Free Press that Burmistrov has a he's under contract, quote unquote.
Yep.
So this is all nonsense. This is the same agent who represents Alexei Yashin, who sat out an entire year while under contract. So I don't take anything he has to say, that being Mark Gandler, and anything close to face value. I think the story is not yet over.
How do you think that there's the bad blood? There seems to be bad blood or some sort of animosity between Burmistrov and, say, Jets management or Jets head coach Claude Noel. Do you think that's something that's going to be a serious factor that Jets fans should monitor going forward?
I think it might be a factor, Richie, but I want to say something about Alexander Burmistrov. He was a first-round pick of the Atlanta Thrashers franchise, and obviously he just completed his second year playing on the second line, and I think we'd all agree that, you know, He shouldn't have been on the second line, and he was playing with Evander Kane, and he didn't put up offensive totals like I thought he could, and you know, Alexander Burmistrov now in the final year of his entry level contract, you know, the Jets / Thrashers franchise has invested a lot in Alexander Burmistrov, and you could argue that he would have been served better playing in the AHL or maybe even in one more year in junior and then last year in the AHL. But they have a lot invested in him. And I know that, you know, there have been reports that the management and coaching staff weren't happy with him at certain points in the season. And rightly so. I mean, Alexander Burmistrov was very inconsistent this year. And there were some games he was intense. Other games he was lacking intensity. And he was engaged certain games and not engaged certain games. So I know that they have high hopes for Alexander Burmistrov in the Jets organization, and they certainly wouldn't be happy to know, you know, that he was considering going over to Russia. And we don't know. Of course, you're right, Richie. There's definitely a chance that, you know, there is some interest in him, but he is under contract.
That won't matter.
But I mean, the fact is whether or not the Jets were unhappy with his play is really a moot point. The fact is that. He he is a little bit overmatched in a second line center role at this point in his career. He's not a second line.
Jets have anything better.
He's
that.
Not a second line center.
Anything better to play there. So
right, but I mean,
you said
I
all
mean,
year, you
the
play
Jets,
him and you see what you got. I never loved him. I think a lot of fans love him. I've never loved him. Said it on the
he's
show.
He's not
before.
Ilya Kovalchuk, Richie.
No, but I think his ceiling is lower than people think. But in terms of the Jets, ramifications of him leaving would, of course, be significant because, A, could you get somebody off free agency to perform better than Bremistrov did in a second line role? Of course you could. But you lose an
28
asset.
28 points? I hope you can.
But you lose an asset.
Yeah, and you pay. And you have to pay and a lot more for it.
He was playing with Evander Kane and he got 28 points.
Sure
he was playing for Kane. He wasn't playing with Kane the whole year.
He was playing with most of the
He played
year.
In the fourth line of Fairmount. They took yeah. him. They separated him and Andropov for whatever reason for a long period of time. I don't know why they did that. But regardless, I mean, he didn't play great. He had spurts, and that's fine. But you lose an asset. And when you're the Jets and you really don't have that many assets, don't have that many assets.
That's right.
Let's not confuse. Let's not lie to anybody here. There's not many assets. He's an asset. Whether you use him or trade him or play
and
him,
you've put in heavy investment
put
in
time
that
time into him, sure. Yeah. But you want to lose an asset for nothing, especially for possibly a long period of time. So that's a concern.
Before we move on to the next thing, just should be noted: the NHL has scheduled a hearing with Phoenix defenseman Radoslav Klesla for tomorrow
he'll
afternoon.
Get a game or two.
So there's a
maybe a fine.
There is a possibility.
A game. I mean, you know what?
He'll be suspended.
There's no need for a hit from behind on an unsuspecting player in the middle of the neutral zone. His hit was dirty. I mean, Tyson Nash and Talent's opinion. I don't agree with him on either point. Rafa Torres is running around like a chicken with his head cut off, an irresponsible guy, knocks out one of the best players in the game. The guy can hardly stand in the light, and I disagree with him completely on that. Torres deserved what he got, and I hope his appeal doesn't succeed. Klesla, again, heading from behind, are you waiting for somebody to break a neck? The National Hockey League is asking for problems if they don't suspend a guy like Klesla there for a hit like that.
Well, speaking about that, that's the next topic I wanted to hit on, is Rafa Torres is going to appeal his 25-game suspension.
Torres is a bum.
You've made your opinion perfectly clear on that. Do you think that the punishment was not consistent with what the NHL had handed down previously to other people, which seems to be the crux of the argument that the NHLPA
is
going to
be made? But he's a repeat offender.
He's a
sure,
repeat
offender. Yeah, he didn't give somebody 25 games. Well, clearly 4 games wouldn't work or 5 games wouldn't work or whatever it may be. This guy doesn't care. He plays with reckless abandon. So give him more games and wake him up. Because the safety of other players, that's my issue with the PA. If you pulled the players anonymously, I bet you most of them would say, good, get him off the ice. It's always been a player's issue. My dad always used to say that. The players have to enforce it themselves. The problem is this, guys. He's running around ruining other players' careers.
Why is that the NHLPA never worries about the guy that he ruins? Why isn't the NHL...
Money.
Well, what do you mean
they're
by
both
money?
Getting because Host is getting paid while he's injured, and if Torres' suspension gets docked down, he gets paid.
Well, if Hossa
money,
was
that's a, all
if,
they care about is money.
If Hossa was a UFA after this season, okay, let's speculate. Hossa was a UFA. Mm-hmm. Now, it would not surprise me, based on the reports we've heard about Marian Hossa, he can't handle light right now. He sits in dark rooms because that's how sensitive he is, you know, based on the concussion. You know, say he can't play next year, and I'm not saying he can or can't, but hypothetically, mm-hmm. say a player gets asked, he's a UFA. You know, it's the fourth game of the playoffs. The team loses in 6 games. The guy's a UFA, but he can't perform because he's concussed. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't the NHLPA ever stand up for that guy? You never hear them, you know, going to war for
that's
that
right.
guy.
That's right.
You only hear about the guy who's been suspended because he, like you that's said, right. is you know plays with reckless abandon.
That's right. They bring it upon themselves. These players and they allow guys in place, and if they're it's all about money, that's fine. But if you want to talk about safety and preserving the best players in the game and their ability to perform at a high level without the worry, anxiety, and nervousness of being clubbed in the head by fourth-line bums who have no intention of playing the puck, then you're doing it yourself.
Guys, last year, Rafi Torres was on the Vancouver Canucks. And everybody remembers the hit on Brent Seabrook last year.
Yep.
And they did not suspend Rafi Torres for that hit. And this year,
he's a waste of talent.
He did the exact same thing, and he put out Marian Hossa on the same team, another player on the same team. Pardon me.
Yeah, on the Blackhawks.
On the Blackhawks.
He was on a different team, yeah. but he took out the guy.
Right, same team.
Yeah.
This year, he wasn't going to get away with it. And Rafi Torres was suspended. I'm trying to get it up here, but he was suspended in January for his hit on Nate Prosser. I'm trying to get it up, but maybe somebody else can get it up, but maybe Ream can get it up. How many times he's been suspended in the NHL? It's 4 or 5, I believe. Might be more than that.
It's certainly a sizable amount.
You know, he's the new Matt Cook. Matt Cook learned his lesson this year for the Pittsburgh Penguins. He wasn't suspended. Rafi Torres got away with it last year. He should have been suspended. We all agreed that he should have been suspended for his hit on Brent Seabrook in last year's first round. This year, he wasn't going to get away with it. And 25 games, as far as I'm concerned, is exactly what he should have gotten. He's a headhunter. You know what? I like physical hockey, but Rafi Torres is a headhunter. He gets his elbows up, and, you know, this is a scary thing with Marian Hossa, Richie. You know, this is a severe concussion. And, I mean, we've talked about it a lot. I mean, a concussion is a concussion is a concussion. It's brain damage. But that hit, I mean, the image everyone's going to have, Drew, in that first round of that series is Marian Hossa leaving on a stretcher.
Yeah.
And, obviously, you don't want to, you know, speculate, but this is the type of injury, you know, this is Mark Savard territory here. This could be a career ender.
Yep. Well, that's right. Where's Mark Savard? Where's Mark Savard right now? He's sitting at home, one of the best passers in the National Hockey League over the past 10 years. He's sitting at home, still having problems with concussion and not playing on the ice. And where's Matt Cook?
Well, Matt Cook's playing for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but he seems to have reformed himself this
year. He's reformed, sure. But yeah.
Well, let's see if he actually has. You know, sure. I'm willing to give him more than a year.
You know what?
Well,
there you go, right? Is that what you want? Is that what the league wants?
Well, you're gonna have a league full of Matt Cooks and a house full of Mark Savards, and that's not a good trade-off.
I don't think
the NHLPA is gonna be able to present a good case. Rafi Torres is a notorious headhunter with a long line of suspensions, and of course that factors into it. It factors into it in the legal system. If you've broken into a car 10 times, the 11th time you do it, you think the judge is gonna look at you differently?
Exactly right.
Of course he is.
Exactly right.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we have more NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Shaw Park for the Winnipeg Gold Eyes 2012 open house. You're listening to TSN 1290. Live at Shaw Park, home of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. It's the Gold Eyes 2012 open house. Some batting practice taking place right behind us here.
Are they going to let us out there and take some BP?
I'm not sure, is he? We'll find out after. We got another half an hour.
Richie's been talking up my pole swing.
Well, we're gonna align all the defense to be standing on the foul side of the third base bag.
Yeah. And some people have said that I bat like Cecil Fielder.
No, you look like Cecil Fielder.
Oh.
Look like Cecil Fielder.
Or I eat like Cecil Fielder.
Yeah, eat like, you know.
I wish I could hit like Cecil or Prince Fielder.
Yeah, there you go. I think you'd rather just get paid like Prince Fielder.
On the road trip to your wedding, and if people out there didn't know, Richie Hart, our good friend Hart, and I drove to Lexington, Kentucky, and on the way we saw baseball games in St. Louis and Kansas City, and we saw Prince Fielder steal a base.
Really?
We were shocked. Watching
literally,
Prince,
he picked up the base and just ran away.
Really?
Yeah.
No, but I mean, he's a good power hitter. But he stole a base, and you know, Prince Fielder, and obviously Cecil Fielder, the great Detroit Tiger.
Yeah, he was a Detroit Tiger. He was
Blue Jay.
He was a Blue Jay before he went to Japan.
Really?
That's really where he.
So he's big in Japan. We're big in Japan, apparently, too.
Really?
You know who else is? We got Darren Bomey in here. He's big in Japan
as
well.
He's huge in Japan.
Yeah. Lots of fans because. Because he can write and speak in Japanese, and he's known as the Canadian Godzilla there.
Oh, man. The Calgary Flames signed the KHL's leading playoff scorer, Roman Cervenka, to a one-year, $3.8 million deal.
How many times did you practice pronouncing that name? That's
actually,
what I want to know.
Relatively speaking, for a KHL name, it's pretty easy, so I didn't need that much practice there. What do you make of the signing? What do you know about Cervenka? You know, it's sort of an under-the-radar move, but apparently he had a number of teams he was sought after by.
Well, it's an interesting signing by a team like Calgary because we're not really sure what their vision is necessarily. But I think it's pretty low risk. I mean, the risk is money.
Yeah.
Calgary's got a lot of money. They have a lot of cap room now. A lot of guys coming off the books, and they're probably going to make certain moves with some veteran players, although who knows what this signifies. But I don't know a ton about him. It's not a guy who stood out to me when playing in international competition because there's many other, obviously, stars on the ice. But he's performed quite well in the KHL.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not going to cost you too much. And he's performed with guys, any guys with NHL experience before. And why not? I mean, what I project for a guy like that, you know, probably 15 to 20 goals, 50 points kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, hey, those guys don't grow on trees necessarily, right. So it doesn't hurt to add a guy like that. Maybe he'll be better.
And
I haven't really seen him play. If I've seen him play, I didn't notice him, so it's hard to comment.
It's sort of an interesting dynamic here in that the Flames, you know, the Flames' risk is minimal because, like you said, it's 1 year. And Cervenka, if he's great, is going to, you know, we'll get a jackpot next year. You know, if he goes out and performs to, obviously, I'm guessing what he thinks he can do, you know, he's in line for a big contract as a UFA after next season. Or if he busts out, he can go back to the KHL, and, you know, he's shown that he can be one of the top players in the KHL. Mm-hmm. So, you know, minimal risk all around with a great deal of reward available to Cervenka at the end of the one year. So that's a sort of a big advantage
and
for
minimal
him.
Risk for everybody.
The, and you know, no, that is the point with the Calgary Flames right now, and especially with, you know, the future of Jerome Iginla uncertain. You've got, when, as far as the prospects in the Calgary system, and a lot of those guys are already playing. That Sven Barchi and Michael Backlund is still 21 years old and he's young, but you had Roman Horak, who was, you know, didn't do much with Calgary last
year. They don't
year.
Have much insistence.
But I mean, this is a signing. You know, as far as Roman Cervenka goes, he is a guy that was a late bloomer. But you have to temper these expectations. I mean, look at what happened with Fabian Brunstrom. And I remember, I think I drafted him in a hockey pool we were once in, because he was talked about how the Toronto Maple, and it always seems to be, the Toronto Maple Leafs seem to always be after these guys. I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign, but you know, let's just wait and see. He hasn't played a single game in the NHL. You know, you play well on the bigger ice in the Czech Extra Liga and the Continental Hockey League. That's one thing.
Good point,
and, you know, everything we've heard about this guy is that he's been very good internationally, too, and played for Czech Republic in the World Junior Tournament. But, you know, you got to temper your expectations. I mean, not every guy is going to be a Hawk and Lube.
Nice.
Remember, he won the Rookie of the Year for the Flames.
Number 12.
Yep. I do recall that. Ted Lindsay nominees came out earlier this week. Ted Lindsay Award is the only award voted on by the NHL players.
It used
themselves.
To be the Lester B. Pearson Award. A lot of people were tweeting that at Illegal Curve.
Yeah.
The Ted Lindsay Award is the renaming of the Lester B. Pearson Award.
Right. Exactly. Which is good, because, you know, they give credit to some of the older guys, like the the invention or the of the Maurice Richard Award.
What was that line called, Drew?
The which line? The Ted Lindsay line?
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to the comments on this show, I actually wasn't around in the 1960s.
He was only 10 years old then. You can't fault him for that.
Yes?
I don't remember, actually. What was it?
I'm now forgetting.
Okay, there you go. Serves you right.
Was it the assembly line?
Mm.
Yeah. I know it was Sid Abel, Gordie Howe, and Ted Lindsay. I'm just trying to remember what the name was of the line.
We're going to go with
Reams.
Reams is going to look it up. But Darren bombing in front of us.
I know the players on the line. I don't. Anyhow.
Yeah. Anyways.
Del Vecchio was on that team back then? Del Vecchio?
Henrik Lundqvist, Evgeny Malkin, and Steven Stamkos were the three nominees.
Yep, and those are the same nominees for the Hart. Lundqvist, Stamkos, and Malkin are the same nominees for the Hart Trophy. But you know what's always interesting?
The production line.
The production line.
Okay.
Yeah. Obviously, we're not the production line, because we didn't, and Richie isn't, because he didn't remember that. I bet producer Tim back would have got that one, because, you know, producer, production line.
That's good.
But you know, this means something to the players. It does. It's voted by the players, and the Hart Trophy. Let's be honest. The Hart Trophy, more often than not, goes to the guy with the most points. And the way Henrik Lundqvist has played in the playoffs, you could argue he's got to be given more credit. A goaltender always seems to be a long shot to win that trophy. But when you have an award that's voted by the players, I think that means something more to the players.
Well, I find it funny, because a lot of Philly fans were whining that Claude Giroux wasn't up for the Hart Trophy.
He would have been a good candidate.
Saying there's a bias against the Flyers by the media, and then the players go and they don't even vote for Claude Giroux.
Yeah.
So it's sort of their argument was proven to be not very valid.
But
at
the
that
argument
point
is
in time.
You can't. Stamkos has 60 goals. You can't cut him out. Malkin leads the league in points. You can't cut him out. Lundqvist, you know, had an unbelievable year for the Rangers in net. I mean, it's a tough decision. I mean, sometimes a guy like Claude Giroux, you can make the argument that he was in a tough year. And this is a tough year. Another tough year for the Vezina Trophy as well. I mean, this isn't a year where there's a runaway favorite. I mean, this isn't 2005, 2006, when Ovechkin got the Hart Trophy, the Conn Smythe Trophy, and all that.
But if Lundqvist is up for the Ted Lindsay Award here, and he's up for the Hart Trophy, and he's not going to win those, I think we would agree with that, right?
Probably not.
So I think that sort of puts him in almost as a shoe-in for the Vezina.
Probably.
Keep in mind, all these awards are voted on prior to the
playoffs.
To the playoffs.
Yeah, that's right.
So Lundqvist can easily win that, and Quick, and if LA keeps doing what they do, Quick
will
be
a better candidate next year now that everybody's seen him perform in the playoffs. And I don't so much mean the playoffs as much as, I mean, they've seen him perform.
Right.
Nobody sees the Western. You know, it's 10:30 start times in the East. You don't
see
him.
Sure, you never
see
him. Yeah. Which is why tomorrow will be interesting, because tomorrow's game 4 of the Blues and the Kings is an afternoon start. I believe it's a 12 noon start or a 1 o'clock start in Los Angeles, either 2 or 3 here in Winnipeg. So people that normally, like you said, don't get to see Jonathan Quick will get to see him. Now, I can't recall when the Jets played the Kings here in Winnipeg. Was Quick in net, or was it Bernier?
I think it was quick.
You know what?
It's a 1-0 game. I remember that.
I'm pretty sure it was quick.
I'm pretty sure it was
Bernier. I just flipped to it right now. It was Bernier.
Oh, well.
What do I know?
Yeah. So, I mean, my memory's never
Winnipeg
been good.
Winnipeg fans haven't even seen Jonathan Quick aside from the occasional highlight
and whatnot.
But, I mean, you know, because for years, Jonathan Bernier was the goalie of the future, and Quick was
still
just
is.
Sort of...
Probably somewhere else.
Somewhere else now. I mean, you know, it was...
Tampa's apparently interested.
Oh, how could you not be?
Well, which is going to make the
Maybe
market
Columbus
for...
is interested.
It makes the market for Luongo all the more difficult.
I think a guy like Bernier would have to look at a Corey Schneider at 22 years old and say, I don't want to... The writing's on the wall here. Jonathan Quick, Roberto Luongo... They're both not under contract for 10 years, but let's be honest, Jonathan Quick is your number one guy. He'll be number one for a long time.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how it says. Carolina Hurricanes general manager Jim Rutherford claims that they're going to be very active come the offseason, talking about, you know, maybe acquiring Jordan Staal if Pittsburgh puts him on the market because they won't be able
to... I'm sure he didn't talk about that, but that was speculated.
Sorry, that's
Eric DeHatch wrote about that in the Globe and Mail.
That's right. Speculated that he's going to be active, maybe in on Zach Parise.
Yeah.
He's a UFA. You know, is Carolina going to become a hotspot for players?
No.
Not literally.
I just don't see how
literally.
I don't see how that happens. I don't see anybody really wants to go there unless they overpay. I don't see somebody taking a market. If you're Zach Parise, we talked about this last week. If you're Zach Parise and you got an offer from Detroit and Carolina and the money's the same, I mean, the pizza guys can go fight over themselves, but where are you going to go?
Carmanos, is he a pizza guy also?
Yeah, isn't he?
I know he's CompuWare, if I'm not mistaken.
Herman Cain was a pizza guy.
He's a computer guy. Right? I don't think he's a pizza guy.
The junior teams is why they didn't like each other.
That's
anyhow.
Right. Peter Carmanos is from
the
Detroit. Mike Ilitch, the owner of the Red Wings, strongly dislike each other.
Legal Curve is a Carbone pizza family.
That's exactly. Right.
Very true, yes.
Well put, Ezzy. But if you're Zach Parise and you have an offer of 5 years, $40 million from Detroit and Carolina, you're not going to go to Carolina unless you offer 5 years, $50 million from Carolina.
Jordan Staal, if he gets traded, I mean, there does seem to be a matchup there. You know, Pittsburgh could use a good young defenseman. Mm-hmm. Carolina's got Justin Falk. I don't know if they would trade him for Jordan Staal. Well, let me ask. If you're Carolina, do you trade Justin Falk? You know, 18 played as an 18-year-old defenseman for your team, played very well, got
very high on him.
Yeah. Do you trade him for Jordan Staal?
Yeah. Pittsburgh wouldn't do that straight up. No chance.
I've got the Eric Duhatchik article up, and the title of the article is Jordan Staal in the trade block, and I mean,
he makes
Pittsburgh needs a defenseman.
He makes well exactly right. That's but why is, I it, think we're going to explore next week in the weeks coming. You know, some targets for the Jets. Would the Jets do a Zach Bogosian for Jordan Staal trade? Just postponing
his question. And you'd probably have to throw in a draft pick,
right.
And maybe even another player because Jordan Staal is. He would be the Jets' first line center.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he would be. Yeah, that's my question.
So, I mean, you're a third line center on Pittsburgh, and because Pittsburgh happens to have Crosby and Malkin, you're third line center. And I think Jordan Staal likes playing in Pittsburgh, and Carolina would be interested because his brother's there, and that would be ridiculous.
That was the connection.
Right. But, I mean, yeah, that's what it boils down to, Drew, really. Does Ray Shiro want to trade Staal? And, I mean, you're going to have to trade somebody to get a defenseman. And the problem with Pittsburgh this year was all on defense.
Oh, defense. It's true.
It was all on defense.
But this is the thing about the centers, and Eric talked about this in the article. If you have Crosby, you don't know what his health is going to be like. And he's a free agent after next year. So unless something happens in that, they re-sign Crosby to a big deal for after next season, then I don't think they can even negotiate with him until July 1st.
No, they can't negotiate. Right. You can start negotiating in the calendar year, that's July 1st, right.
Exactly.
Previous to him becoming
a
UFA.
2012. So they can start July 1st, but I just don't see how they can trade Staal, not knowing whether A, Crosby will come back, or B, whether he'll have concussion issues, and B, whether he'll come back. Those are two significant issues. You talk about Malkin, I think he's still your number one guy there, and you're going to move forward. But there's too many moving pieces,
and the other team,
Eric highlights all of them.
Yeah, the Edmonton Oilers might trade the first overall pick to get Staal. That's not going to be enough either.
I don't see Crosby needs to sign an extension, as far as I'm concerned, or at least tell them he's going to sign an extension prior to any Jordan Staal move, because you can't suddenly lose both.
Exactly right. I'll tell you what, let's go to break. When we come back, we have one final segment coming up. It's called Rapid Fire. Everybody knows it and loves it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Shaw Park for the Gold Eyes 2012 open house, which is just winding up. One segment to come. Stay tuned. Welcome back.
back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon. We're live at Shaw Park for the Gold Eyes 2012 Open House, which is just winding down. The team is finishing with their first exercises of the spring training season. Finishing up, walking off the field. Been a great day here at Shaw Park.
Absolutely.
One final segment. You know it. You love it.
Rapid Fire.
Starting off rapid fire today, the NCAA College Hockey, which currently mandates that all players wear a full cage, is reportedly set to alter that rule and have all players wear a three-quarter visor.
Yep.
The change will be made because it is felt that the full cage limits peripheral and up-and-down vision too severely. Do you think a three-quarter visor improves vision significantly enough to outweigh the increase in facial lacerations that will undoubtedly occur as a result of the change to the three-quarter length visor?
I don't know about that one. I mean, you know, we just started playing spring hockey, and I got the full cage, and I was considering a half visor. But I don't know if I would do that. While you're, you're laughing that I participate in physical activity. That's pretty much what I'm laughing at.
But, exactly.
No, I mean, I think it's a little bit ridiculous. I don't think it limits vision that much. I mean, it's about safety, and you know they've decided to take this step. But I guess, you know, there are people in the hockey equipment business that know them a lot more than I do. But I, you know, it seems like there's going to be more injuries, and I think that then they're going to have to reevaluate. So I don't have a definitive answer for you as far as whether I like this or not.
Three quarter shield, is that like?
I guess
like Danny Heatley's wearing those long ones down to the, I'm reading here, like Danny Heatley, like down to his mouth kind of thing.
I think it would just sort of stop right underneath his, right above his lips. So like your mouth and your teeth are available. Or unless it goes all the way and covers the jaw but leaves the mouth region.
Then why don't they get rid of the cages and just have visors with cages at the bottom?
The half visor, half cage.
Right.
It's a fair question.
Or all visor with the thing at the bottom. I don't understand.
Well, if the issue is peripheral vision, I'm not sure how much of a...
The bottom of the... If the issue is peripheral vision, why does the bottom of the helmet have any effect on it?
Peripheral and up and down to some extent. But, I mean, your up and down is still going to be affected.
What do you use a cage for, like, half a game? You adjust to it. So.
You know, if you're going to make them...
I don't particularly understand this. You already have the rule in place. Why are you going back on it? You're only going to create more facial injuries.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think they...
Skate to the mouth? Or skate... Like, these skates are going everywhere these days. You're only creating a... That's an odd decision.
I think it's for sort of head injuries, because if a guy's trying to find the puck in his feet, it's more difficult
with
a full cage. I mean, I'm trying to logically play it out.
And obviously, equipment manufacturers have decided that this is a valid premise.
Is it offset as he then by other injuries? That's
the
question too.
Well, right? That's the question. And how severe are the injuries you're replacing with injuries that you're bringing in?
It seems like an odd decision.
Well, we'll see how it plays out.
We got a lot of NCAA games. I saw three this year.
Yeah.
I saw three this year. They're physical games, but they're nothing crazy.
It's never come up
in Western Hockey League.
It's never come up in conversation with anyone that I've ever talked about with the NCAA that they should be taking.
Yeah, that's weird.
Shields out.
Kyle Kozier, happy birthday, Kyle. He's the one who definitely, he's our, you know, the much more in tune with the NCAA game than we are necessarily. So he'd be interesting to hear his opinion on that. Next question in rapid fire. Anyone who watched the overtime marathon earlier this week could see that players on both teams were completely out of energy. We saw Alex Ovechkin eat an energy bar while sitting on the bench, while other players reported having orange slices, bananas, and white rice with soy sauce in the intermissions. If you were playing...
Hold on, isn't that what Drew was eating while he was
breaks? Between that... Drew eats between breaks to get through the show.
Exactly, yeah. If you were playing in the midst of a triple overtime marathon... What would be your food of choice?
Oh, good question.
Ooh, that is a good question. I like the white rice with soy sauce. We got a train going
by here.
Wouldn't
that kind of be when you need water? I guess you drink water to offset it.
Yeah.
I would probably go for like a burger and fries.
Seems like
something healthy like poutine.
Poutine with
bacon bits or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Nice and light.
Yeah, but in all honesty, if I was a professional hockey player and God help everyone, I'm not. I would be doing orange slices, Powerade.
I'd probably go for a banana.
Yeah, banana.
Maybe drink Powerade or Gatorade on the bench. A banana and maybe even like a chocolate bar.
Get some little energy going.
It doesn't take up too much. It doesn't get you full.
No,
right?
You don't want to be Logie for the next overtime.
That's right. Did you just say Logie?
I said Logie.
You don't want to be Logie.
Okay.
The Tampa Bay Lightning announced that they will have a new HD video display scoreboard in time for the start of next season.
What was it, regular standard def?
I'm not sure what it was, but the scoreboard will be the largest center-hung video display in any U.S. or Canadian arena at a size of 28 feet high by 50 feet wide.
Wow.
For comparison's sake, the scoreboard at Cowboy Stadium in Dallas is 50 feet by 180 feet.
Isn't that what the mirror is in your bathroom?
That's true. That's exactly how big the mirror is in my bathroom. How much do you think this scoreboard will cost the Lightning?
Do you know the answer?
I know the answer.
They won't pay for it in season tickets.
Okay, no, but hold on, Richie. Let's guess how much they paid for the screen.
How much does a 28 feet high by 50 feet wide scoreboard cost?
I'm going to guess $3.5 million.
Where did they get it? At Future Shop?
I'm not sure where they got it.
$3.5 million. It's almost as big as the screen Richie has in his house. Okay, I'm going to guess $3.5 million. Really? Is that how much something like that would cost?
I have no clue.
I'm going to say, I feel like Drew's setting us up here. I'm going to say $500,000.
Well, you're way off. You're a little low. $5 million.
$5 million for a screen.
Will that bring fans in, though, to make up that? I know Vinick's a good owner. Like, he's good to his fans, but will that bring enough fans back to make it worthwhile?
Well, that's the question. You know, how much?
It's a little bit too big.
Too big? I don't think it would be too big. I mean,
is it bigger than the Dallas?
No. Dallas Stadium
it's
is
like half
50
of the
feet
size.
By 180
well,
feet.
Well, it's a bigger, but it's probably taking up more of the actual arena than the one in Dallas is.
Conceivably, based on the dimensions and everything. I mean, it's a very nice fan amenity, but can you, I mean, that's the question. Can you make it worth your money is it worth your money to do that?
Our friend Sean Udo on Twitter right now just at-tweeted you and said, define Logie.
Well, Logie comes from The Simpsons, where Bart is engaging in the mini golf tournament, and Lisa says that Bart has to have oats before the big tournament. Homer says steak, and Lisa says, no, steak will make him Logie.
But what does Logie mean?
Well, I really don't know what it is. Sluggish, yeah. Tired.
Sluggy. Okay, yeah. Sluggy. Sluggy
that's
Logie.
And Lisa says, no, the Kentucky Derby horses eat oats before the Derby. Derby coming up, of course, in a couple hours.
You don't want to be Logie during the Illegal Curve Hockey
Show.
That's
right. You don't want to be Logie.
Last question. Capitals defenseman Carl Alzner came home after the Caps' triple overtime defeat to find his house had been ransacked. The culprit? Alzner's two dogs.
What kind of dogs were they?
I'm not sure. There's a picture.
I saw the picture. Yeah.
In the photo,
if you read the show plan,
exactly.
I never read the show plan.
In the photo of the incident that he tweeted, you can see a dog crate in the background waiting to be assembled. What do you think Alzner regrets more, that the Caps didn't win the game or that he didn't put the dog crate together in a timely fashion?
That the Caps didn't win the game because through playing the game, he's allowed to pay some. He makes so much money that he can pay somebody to clean up his mess.
Exactly. People will watch your dog while you're at the rink. He probably wasn't happy. I don't know if these are new dogs or if he's had these dogs for a while, but I'm sure he was more upset at losing the game.
It was a good picture, though. It was pretty entertaining.
Oh, yeah, the dogs look so guilty.
The dogs are so cute, though.
Yeah, they look so guilty. Like, oh, yeah, I did something wrong.
Yeah, you couldn't feel bad. You couldn't punish the dogs. They're too cute. Let's wrap it up. It's called Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And Jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock.
Well, you don't want to give a cheer, but you want to acknowledge passing. We've been playing the Beastie Boys music all day.
Yeah.
Acknowledge the passing of MCA. We all grew up on, like, the Beastie Boys. Yeah. Our generation. But I think
I grew up on Paul Anka.
That's right. tying it into hockey, though, I mean, if you played hockey growing up, like, I think we can all agree that the Beastie Boys was
the best.
One of the CDs, tapes that we brought into the locker room to listen to before and after games to pump you up. Of course. And so I think we have to acknowledge that's obviously sad, and our thoughts are, you know, with his family.
Yeah, I'm going to echo Richie. I grew up idolizing the Beastie Boys, and it was a sad loss for the world in general because he was an activist for MCA and Adam Yauch. So I definitely rest in peace for Adam Yauch for sure. I'm going to cheer playoff overtime, and this definitely goes hand in hand with the triple T game of Washington and the New York Rangers that the Rangers won. You know, people are talking about, you know, 4-on-4. Absolutely not. Playoff overtime, in my opinion, is the best time, you know, is the best thing in all of professional sports. And I love it. It could go to 7 overtimes. There could be no goals. I love it. I'm cheering 5-on-5 playoff overtime.
I'll wrap up Cheers and Jeers by cheering our host today here at Shaw Park. That's the Winnipeg Goldeyes.
Yep.
It's been an absolutely fabulous day down at the ballpark. The weather was perfect. The crowds were huge.
Oh, yeah.
Just a terrific atmosphere.
Great time.
Yep. Great time here.
We've got to give a big shout-out to Colin.
Yeah, Colin for doing
Colin,
the reading behind us.
Remus, Timmy. Producer Tim back Remus. In the studio. Yeah.
Exactly. Just a terrific day down here at Shaw Park. We're excited about the Goldeyes season. Gets underway with a couple exhibition games Monday, Tuesday. You can listen to all the games live on TSN 1290, of course. And then the regular season, the home opener, May 29th, back at Shaw Park. So I'll wrap up Cheers and Jeers by thanking the Goldeyes for their hospitality.
Thanks to Paul Edmonds and GM Andrew Collier.
Exactly, that's right. Big thank you to our sponsors here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's the Cheer Bar and Grill, Carboni Coal-Fired Pizza, David Carr of Monopoly Realty at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. A big thank you to today's guests, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette and Tyson Nash of Fox Sports. He's the Phoenix Coyotes color analyst. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com, your home for all your Winnipeg Jets and NHL playoff news. For my colleagues, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Colin, who's been on site with us, and Tim back at the studio, my name is Drew Mandel, and if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk. Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Only on TSN.